So it is absolutely no secret that Tiffany Lee is the OG of pelvic health in OT. She gave me the confidence I needed to do this work. I took my very first course with her, and she looked me in the eye and told me we belong in this space. And my gosh, was she right? She has continued to be such a source of inspiration, advocacy, and an example of beautiful leadership in our community. You can't imagine how honored I was when she asked to interview me for a course that she was taking towards her post-professional doctorate, all focusing on leadership. I'm sharing with you today that conversation, that interview, which neither of us knew we would be sharing outside of her doing her research. The conversation is really informal and really off the cuff. I wanted to share it with you as kind of a window or insight into my own thoughts regarding advocacy in our profession and how we each take the meaning of leadership a little bit differently. And I love that. It's very rare that I get interviewed. I'm usually the one who is so privileged to speak to so many amazing, incredibly talented people in our community. I thought it might be nice to hear a short episode today, sharing a little bit about my background and sharing some vulnerable aspects to my career trajectory. So without further ado, I thank you, Tiffany Lee, for not only taking the time to interview me, but for all of the inspiration that you have not only given me, but all pelvic health OTPs. We love you. New and seasoned OTs are finding their calling in pelvic health. After all, what's more ADL than sex, peeing, and poop? But here's the question: what does it take to become a successful, fulfilled, and thriving OT in pelvic health? How do you go from beginner to seasoned and everything in between? Those are the questions, and this podcast will give you the answers. We are inspired OTs. We are out of the box OTs. We are pelvic health OTs. I'm your host, Lindsay Vestal, and welcome to the OTs in Pelvic Health podcast.
Okay. So the first question, ma'am, is tell us a little about your professional career.
Do you want me to go before OT or just start with OT?
That's up to you.
All right. So I was an English undergrad and really enjoyed writing, but I also was a choreographer and a modern dancer. And I always thought of those things as fun and writing as work. And so I got a job as a technical writer at a software company. And at the same time, I was still involved with my undergrad university doing choreography and dancing. So then I realized I didn't have to delineate the two as fun and work, and I could combine the two. So, long story short, I found OT, which was not easy. Thought I was going to be a PT, and I discovered pelvic health because of some issues my father was going through. So it became very personal and passionate for me to recognize that I could make money doing something I loved, because I guess I don't think I thought that was possible. Now, obviously, I wasn't dancing and choreographing, but I very much feel like my skills that I use in OT are a form of that, especially as OTs were big into task analysis. And as a modern dancer, I did a lot of that. Interestingly enough, the director of the dance company lives just moved to Colorado, and I'm in Colorado right now. And when I was doing work yesterday for the new trauma-informed pelvic health certification I'm developing, I was doing a lot of research on neuroception and interoception, which is basically the ability to understand emotion. And when I was doing modern dance, the director I just reconnected with was big into something called Laban notation, which is deciphering how movement evokes emotion. And so it seems, maybe on the surface level, not connected. For me, it's very connected. I see these themes of interpreting emotion, better understanding how emotion is read in the body, feeling safe and feeling at ease. And so it took me a little while to get there. But when I finally did, and I realized I could make money doing something that was a thread in many aspects of my life, I really felt like I found home.
Love that. That's so fun. I remember you saying that at some point, but I had forgotten that. I love dance. I mean, I did dance in high school and was head of the team, and I loved to choreograph, and it was just so fun. I've always thought that's what I wanted to do. So now I'm so inflexible and can hardly move. So,
You and me
but I
both. I'm like,
love,
why didn't I
I
keep
love.
that
Yeah. So I've had fun with all these weddings. We just did another Mamma Mia dance to Dancing Queen on Saturday night. So I'm having fun like choreographing for my friends and doing dorky little 2-minute dances. But okay, number two. What is one thing that most people don't know about your leadership journey?
That I am very much an introvert. And have struggled with not only speaking up for myself, but for speaking up for others. And as someone who, thanks to Tiffany Lee, gave me the courage to represent OTs, I guess I am in some version of a leadership role, which means I do have to speak up for people who don't have a voice or maybe think they can't do this work because the work we do is a bit of an underdog. And so, as someone who very much likes to people please, very much wants to make sure everything is going well and in whatever environment I'm in, it's hard to be an advocate. And so I'm a reluctant advocate and I'm definitely a extroverted introvert. And I think the older I've gotten, we were just talking about this last night at dinner with my family, the older I've gotten, the easier it's become to be an extrovert because I really see how in the role that I'm in, talking to so many OTs who just feel like they're not sure if we can do this, it's just made me more loud and more vocal to recognize that we could. And again, like I'm not just saying this because you're interviewing me, Tiffany, but like that confidence when you look me in the eye is something that I continue to pass on forward because all it takes is for someone to believe you, believe in you, and to see that it's possible. And you were that for me. And it's such a privilege to be able to do that for others. So I would say, yeah, that I struggle with not people pleasing. I struggle with, people not thinking that. I guess the takeaway is that the greater desire to empower OTs has enabled me to step outside of whatever discomfort and reluctancy I had when I was younger because of the greater goal that I think is more important.
And you know, it's funny because when you said that, I think you're an extrovert in the public health community, but an introvert probably in other areas because you seem so comfortable in, you know, whenever you're doing podcasts or interviews, and you can only fake it till you make it so many times. And I think you've gotten comfortable in that role of being an advocate. So no one would know that you're an introvert.
Yeah, my
That's
family definitely
amazing.
knows.
Yeah. Well, and my husband, and not him, he's my extrovert, but my husband and my oldest are total, and my soon to be daughter-in-law, major introverts. Like ready to go, get to the wedding, time to go. This is too much, too many people, let's go. You know? And I'm like, we drive four separate cars, the four of us, to a wedding. Like I closed it down, everybody else left. So that's how it works. Just so you'll see, like some people are going to want to stay longer, so it works good if you drive separately to functions.
That's
So,
great.
okay, number three, looking at the study of leadership, many different authors and books are available to read. What are you reading and what have you learned from that author? Ooh.
Yeah. So the one that comes to mind initially is Dare to Lead by Brené Brown. And there's so, I mean, we could speak for 5 hours just on her alone, but I think that what's coming to mind right now is this idea that you could lead with vulnerability. So I think so many of us, and probably because, I'm 45. So for me, being vulnerable on social media, doesn't relate because me growing up, I saw authority figures as polished, as professional, as buttoned up. And I think that, perhaps people younger than me recognize that there's a lot of strength in showing vulnerability. I remember when I had my company in New York City, and all of a sudden, all these pictures were coming out of what a real pregnant belly felt like. I looked down, it's what mine looked like. Wow, other women look like this. And so this idea that you can be strong by being vulnerable is something that I wrestle with, not because I don't believe it, but because in my mind, authority was always buttoned up and polished. So Dare to Lead, and specifically Brené Brown, has really enabled me to kind of step into areas that maybe show me not so polished and buttoned up, and allow people to see the intricacies of the human being in front of them that perhaps they still respect and maybe put on a pedestal, but recognize that there is so much courage in being vulnerable, so that people can see that it's not just something that you put on a pedestal, but that you're relatable, that you're understandable, and that when you feel weak or imposter syndrome, you know that person has too. And I think that that's a really empowering feeling, because the juxtaposition of always being flawless is probably what makes some people feel that they can't step into leadership roles, because they view themselves as flawed. So I think marrying those two worlds, and specifically Brené Brown's book, has helped me with that. Another book that comes to mind, I know you only asked for one, but I am a big reader. Two, actually. One is Leading with Kindness, which, again, I think probably not so much my generation, but my dad was an executive at IBM, and he always. He's a very, very kind person. But I remember coming home from school, and he would be taking late night phone calls, and he would be like yelling at his direct reports. And I remember thinking, oh, to be a leader, you have to be rough around the edges.
You have
And
to
I was like
yell.
7, 8, or 9. I remember thinking, like, my dad is the bomb. Like, well, they're, and also I was a little bit like, how do they take that? Like, he's not their dad, And so it was funny. And when I read this book, and this was a long time ago, Leading with Kindness by Baker, I saw my dad in a new light, and recognized that also female and male leadership is very different. And there's also so much there about why did he feel like he needed to yell? Like, there's so much individuality there. He was the youngest of a large family. He probably always had to yell to be heard. So there's a lot there, but that was really influential. And then one other one I'm going to mention really quick is called Start With Why by Simon Sinek, Sinek. And I like that because I am someone who loves being an entrepreneur. I love the promise of new opportunities and possibilities. Oh, let's create this. Let's build that. Let's make a workshop. And even before I was a leader, when I was just running a private practice in New York City, if I met a new doula, she was offering a workshop. How could I get involved there? A childbirth educator wants to add pelvic health into her curriculum. What can I do there? And I realized that I was starting to spread myself very, very thin, and I didn't have enough energy at the end of the day. And so when I read Start With Why, it helped me refocus how, when I was saying yes to everything, I was saying, what's the expression? When you say yes to everything, by default, you're saying no to other things. Whereas if you choose with intentionality what you say yes to, you're putting your energy in buckets that are important to you and that you could prioritize. And I think something people don't talk about very often is, especially for me, it was very easy to be a new entrepreneur, because I love saying yes. I love saying yes. I love people pleasing. I love the promise of a new opportunity. But when you get to be an intermediate entrepreneur, you have to say no. And that's hard because of that endorphin rush that you get at this new collaboration. So when you step back and before you say yes, so now before I say yes to things, I always ask for some time, and I think about it in my priorities. And I have a board where I list all the things that are important to me for the year that I'm in, and ask myself, how does that fit into that when this new opportunity arises?
Did you know that the third annual OTs in Pelvic Health Summit comes with 1.6 AOTA approved CEUs? Now, while the in-person event has sold out, you can still purchase the recordings for $100 off using the link that's in the show notes. We have a professional videography team coming in to capture every single moment of the summit, so it's the next best thing to being there. Pick up your $100 off tickets with 1.6 AOTA approved CEUs by going to the link in the show notes.
Love that. That's good stuff. Okay. One of the authors we are learning from is John Maxwell. He shares a model of influence through three levels, leading up, leading across, and leading down. Can you provide any examples where you used influence to lead up, lead across, or lead down?
Okay. So an example of leading up, I think, means how are you going to that next level of influence to help your current world? And I would say recently I connected with the AOTA president, Allison Stover. Not only was I able to get her on my podcast to, for the first time in her words, speak about what her top six priorities were, I specifically focused on the one that served my community, which is pelvic health. And so I was scared to death to talk to her, but I felt like it was really important for my community to hear it now, because she's got a 4-year tenure coming up. And I feel like the AOTA is really slow to roll out things. And one of the reasons why I love being an entrepreneur is not having to go to a board, not having to sit in front of a committee to make decisions. I like moving now and being really agile. And so when I invited her, I was like, are you ready to talk about this publicly? Can I have you on my podcast? She said, yes. And I think, and I hope that it's a beacon of light for OTs who are on the fence and wondering if we can do this and need that permission from our national organization to be able to feel like they're going to get represented, they're going to get support. And so that is an example of me leading up. An example of me leading down, I think, would be I speak to universities several times a month. So I was just at Toro. Before that, I went to Creighton in person. And basically, I love speaking with students who are not sure about pelvic health. They typically are always OT students. So they know they want to be an OT, but they're not sure the role of pelvic health. And so I love speaking to students who are in that opportunity or in that point in their life where they're just so open and interested in learning all of the ways that OT can influence. And even if there's not one student who's sitting in that room who gets into pelvic health, them just knowing we can do this is so important to me, because they walk by and someone says, oh, you know, there's a pelvic floor PT for that. If they just take a moment and say, an OT does that too, to me, that was worth it. And so in also recognizing that there's things we can do about urinary incontinence, which most people just think there's nothing, there's no hope. I love instilling that hope that there is something they can do. So that's my mission when I speak at universities. And I was doing it even when I was abroad, but now it's a lot easier because of the time change. So I've really, really been enjoying those connections. And then the last one is leading, what was the?
Across, leading across.
I would say that's me showing up for our Facebook group, because it's people who are much more advanced and experts than I am. It's people who are just starting off, and we all meet somewhere in the middle. And so I'm leading across in the sense that wherever you are in your continuum, I've created a safe place where people can express their views, can have interactive conversations. I'm coming up on 3 years now for the OT Empower Hour. So it's basically creating a space where people can, you know, post their, nagging case studies that they're not sure what to do, whatever query they have. It's creating a space where people respect each other and can kind of come together and not have to answer that question, what is an OT? What is pelvic health? You're past that. And now we can really roll up our sleeves and get much deeper on the things that you want to learn about.
I love that. I think those were great examples for sure. And I definitely see you leading across, and you do a fantastic job. Well, all three, really. Ken Blanchard offers that leaders need to get over the idea that their teams think they know everything. The reality is that leaders don't know it all. What role does transparency play in leadership for you?
So that reminds me a little bit of that question we talked about earlier, which is being vulnerable. And I think there is a difference between transparency and vulnerability, although they do go hand in hand. I guess transparency I will define as honesty, as being clear. So I love this expression, clarity is kindness. So when you're clear, you're able to be a kind person. And so to me, when things are very clear and transparent, people can understand much more so how they want to get involved. How much do they want to roll up their sleeves? Because to be an OT in pelvic health, even if it's not something you set out to do, you do need to be a bit of an advocate. So I had just had a call yesterday where an OT was like, hey, how much am I going to have to fight for myself if I get into this? How much am I going to have to justify my worth to get paid, to get a job? And it's so interesting because I really respect that question, but that was never a question I asked myself because of how much I wanted to be in this. But I feel like for people to be able to articulate that is important because if that passion or that burning drive isn't there, it is going to be a very frustrating experience. So I think being clear as a leader can help people understand the depth of involvement, as an example with that one student. And so I think it starts with being clear with yourself and being very reflective because if you're not, you can, it's funny. I have three dogs in the house with me right now because we're house sitting here. And I see this. One dog gets into a fervor and the other two just go along for the ride, right? What is it? A new noise of food dropping over here. And I think when we're not clear about our intention, we can get caught up in that wave of excitement and enthusiasm and emotion. Whereas when we're start off with clarity within ourselves, start with the why again, that book. You're able to demonstrate that for others, and then therefore potentially as a community leader and advocate, other people can be clear and certain of their role as well.
That's perfect. I love that. What is a lesson that you learned early in your professional career that has stayed with you?
Yeah. So when I was at NYU, I would say half of my professors didn't think I can be an OT in pelvic health, and the other half did. And there was a situation where I was, believe it or not, in an emerging practice areas lab. You thought, where else could you bring up an emerging practice area, but then an emergency practice area lab? This was not the case. The professor leading it did not think that OTs belonged in pelvic health. And so, I was really upset because I knew I wanted to be in this area. And then I went home and I probably cried. And it was the 20, oh, maybe 2009. I can't remember. It was the cover of our OT practice. And it was two cute little old ladies holding hands, walking on the beach. And the title was Incontinence and Our Role. And I was like, this is a sign. So in my mind, I walked into that professor's office or the next day in class, and I just threw that OT practice down on the table and said, I'm going to do this. In reality, I didn't do that. I probably walked in very meek, had the journal in my hand, and said, can I show you something? And I showed it to her and she changed her mind. She said, okay, if our journal is saying this, then go for it. And so what was the question, Tiffany?
What is the lesson you learned early in your professional career that has stayed with you?
So the lesson here was sometimes people give you words, sometimes journals give you words that give you that impetus that you know is inside of you that you just need something tangible to point to. And so for me, it was attending your course and before that, it was me getting this journal article. And I don't think I would have backed down, but I think I would have done a hybrid version. I don't think I would have just like went right into incontinence in this class, because on the flip side, I had another professor at the same time who said to me, why do you want to do this work? I support you, but why do you want to do this work? And I don't remember what I said. I think I said something about improving quality of life and people withdrawing from things that matter to them. And she said to me, so you really like the biopsychosocial aspect of this work. And someone finally gave me a word to anchor into. I didn't know. I didn't have a fancy vocabulary term to know why this was my passion. And so that word has really stuck with me and provided me a framework for kind of feeling at ease with my decisions. And so I had this professor who saw me and gave me an anchor, and I had another one who didn't. And so I think that we don't always have to know exactly where we're headed, but when we have these little influences that give us a word, a look, a journal article, that lean into that and allow that to continue to that, you find that next step and that next step, because that's often what it is. Clarity of purpose, feeling comfortable in your skin, recognizing that these are things we're supposed to do, don't always come to us in a lightning bolt from the sky, right? It's not always this like, ah, I knew the moment I was supposed to be an OT. It's like, no, for some of us, it's more struggling. And that's absolutely okay. In fact, I think we're stronger when that's the case. So I would say a lesson I learned early on in my career is to not necessarily think things are always black and white and so clear, but when you do find these moments of anchoring, allow them to fuel you and give you purpose for that next challenge.
Amen. I love it. I love it. I love it. And I remember that exact journal talking to Brenda and everybody about. Yep.
Jeanette Trees,
Okay. What's that?
I think it
It
was
was Jeanette. It was Brendan Newman and Jeanette
Brendan
Trees.
Newman. Brendan Newman
Yeah.
and
And Brenda and I used to, we actually taught at AOTA about it. I mean, gosh, it was like 2010. I don't even know when it was, but we did a whole course together back then. And then we tried again and something happened. Something happened with someone in her family. So I did it by myself. It was like a 3 hour, and it was like one of the first times ever. And she's like, "I can't come." And so I was like, "Okay." So anyway, she's really neat.
I
Haven't
met her
talked
at
to her in
Marquette. I
years.
took a
Yeah,
bow course with
the
Jeanette, and
bow.
I ran that, and I was like, oh my gosh, you're the person who wrote that article.
Okay, number nine. Finally, what final thoughts do you have for the next generation of leaders? So the thoughts for the next generation of leaders.
Maybe that leadership doesn't always have to look the way you were first introduced to it. So it doesn't have to be that dad who's yelling at night on a phone call. It doesn't have to be anything that you associate with being a leader. Sometimes it just means sticking up for what you believe in. Sometimes it just means believing in yourself and finding that resilience to take that next step. So allow what being a leader means to be redefined for you daily, because there's moments throughout our day to embody it. And, don't be shy, because we all are leaders in moments. It could be in our community, it could be being a parent, it could be owning, a dog. There's moments where you are a leader. And while it may not look like Oprah Winfrey, or the President of the United States, it's allow those moments where you truly have a gift to give, to step into that and to allow others to flourish because of it.
I love it. That was amazing.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation on leadership. Like I said, it was a little surreal being interviewed about leadership from someone who has been a leader in the field and really has been a beacon of light for occupational therapy presence in pelvic health on so many levels. This was a conversation that I had no idea I would end up airing. And so please forgive the off-the-cuff informal nature of it, but I think it's also really fun to kind of get a peek into those type of conversations as well. Tiffany is still offering courses for OTs, and in fact, the course I took with her was her biofeedback course. So if you're interested in checking out the work that she's putting out in the world, you can go to pelvicfloorbiofeedback.com. You can also reach out to Tiffany directly. I have her email in the show notes. Wishing you all a beautiful day.
Thanks for listening to another episode of OTs in Pelvic Health. If you haven't already, hop onto Facebook and join my group, OTs for Pelvic Health, where we have thousands of OTs at all stages of their pelvic health career journey. This is such an incredibly supportive community where I go live each and every week. If you love this episode, please take a screenshot of this episode on your phone and post it to IG, Facebook, wherever you post your stuff, and be sure to tag me and let me know why you like this episode. This will help me to create in the future what you want to hear more of. Thanks again for listening to the OTs and Pelvic Health podcast.